think it's always helpful and when we talk about during on the first day of session, some of the basic fundamentals around practice and what we do and why we do it. I think it's always, you know, a bit of a helpful reminder to ourselves, because it's such a transition to come from, you know, busy lives and about 100 k's up the motorway, and then suddenly land here, and then it's quite a jet lag and a cultural shift. And so we can spend the first day or so just settling in and getting used to the rhythm. And you know, we sit down, we pay attention to the precautions and the container of session, and that does its own magic, but there's also something that we need to do as well. And what's also helpful is that, you know, I guess when we go around at the beginning, is we say what our intentions are for coming here, and we hear other people's intentions as well. And it is really important to have a good, clear sense of why we're here, and not to be casual about it, you know, because it does require effort, in the sense of quite right effort, but effort in that sense of that, you know, if we come here and daydream for 4 days, it's like, well, I guess we're a bit of a break for some benefits, you know, but if we actively, I guess, continue on that stream, then we really haven't gained too much. So I guess that's the first thing, is just that really touching base with what your intention is, and why you're here, why you've made the effort, why you've created the space. And you might not have a clear reason that you can pin on it, you know, something amorphous. But again, it kind of pays not to be casual about this. When Mazumi Roshi would say about Rahatsu Sesshin, which is the Rahatsu, this is kind of our Rahatsu. Rahatsu just means the 8th of December, but it's the traditionally the longest or the most intense session of the year in the Zen calendar, and it always occurs in the, I guess, probably right at the beginning of winter, before the new year. And so he would say that in Rahatsu he presented himself before the Buddhas and ancestors, you know, just in a way, it's like a line or a place that he was, you know, saying to himself and to us that he was not doing this casually or lightly. So, you know, we've created this container, and again, it's not a random set of things. So we have this aspect of silence, and silence is interesting because it's one of the things that is a real shift for us in terms of the, you know, we spend our days talking, you know, or communicating either externally or internally, as is a real marker of session. And so we agree to no unnecessary talking, you know, and we agree to pay attention to what we do, and then pay attention to how we are with others, and to kind of take care of each other in a way that enables each of us to settle down. And then we have this aspect of form, and form, you know, ranges from how we you know, cut a carrot to how we enter the Zendo, and how we sit, and how we walk, and also how we take care of the precautions. So there's a certain, I guess, we meticulousness that's encouraged in Zen around the way that we pay attention to our form, the way the body moves, and what we do physically, and how that's both internal and externally appreciated. You know, when we physically sit down, you know, the first thing we experience is posture. You know, how we sit. We start to encounter our body in a way that's again, it's quite an unusual, a very unusual thing to sit, you know, still for, you know, half an hour at a time, and get to experience, you know, all the physical sensations that arise with that. And so we take care of the environment, and the subtle, I guess, ways that we can adjust our body and relax and maintain that awakeness. And with the breath, you know, the breath kind of comes and goes in its own natural way. And we pay attention to that connecting string between, you know, so-called internal and external world. And the breath is a real constant with our experience. And then we pay attention to our particular form of attentiveness or practice, you know, and it varies depending on, you know, whether you have a formal practice or but most practices will revolve around paying attention to something, and it's kind of like it's artificial in a certain sense, but the fact is that the essence of this practice is really to let go of the constant advertisements, you know, flashing billboard of like, hey, I've got the next big greatest thought for you. And we kind of tootle off after the next great thought experience. And so our practice is to pay attention to, you know, whether it's breath, koan, or some other something that's arising through our six senses, and to rest our mind or our attentiveness or our awareness on that particular sensation. And in doing that, then we practice letting go of attachment to thinking. You know, because that's probably the first thing we'll be coming in. We sit down and there's this, you really feel that visceral bubble of thought that arrives, and then we go off on all kinds of tangents and all kinds of things that we'd like to do or didn't like to do or what we're going to do or should have done or, you know, and all kind of levels. And so our practice is about returning to, you know, to this direct experience, letting go of reasons. And, you know, we start to see that there is a space between thoughts. You know, and that requires a bit of faith, like, that we don't need to entertain ourselves all the time, but also that you know, and if we don't do that, then it's okay, that we're not going to dissolve. You know, so we've been working with eons of relying on thinking. And since the time the conscious thought arose, you know, so this practice again is kind of, I guess it's like that confusion, as when we get confused, is, you know, sometimes that confusion is around that we're still trying to work out something. You know, but the one thing we can remember is that simplicity of the practice it was really, we can be aware of that activity of mind and just stop breathing, let it go, and come back with this direct, something that is direct. You know, like I say, breath gone, pure awareness. Sound of a chainsaw. And we're really only asking ourselves to do this for the next 3 days. So it's 3 days, we're actually given over to this Buddha practice. So it's not a lifetime we're asking. It's quite a short period. It sounds a bit daunting. I want to read a little bit a koan here from Zen Master Rinzai, and this is from the book of Equanimity. And you may have heard it before. And it's typically vigorous koan from Master Rinzai. So Rinzai in Chinese, very poor pronunciation, but Limji he was a Chinese monk, and he was credited with founding a Zen school. And there are two main schools that come down through today, the Socho and the Rinzai school. So he was credited with founding the Rinzai school, and the Rinzai school is quite, I guess, kind of a vigorous school, energetic school, and the Soto school is, it's hard to put things into classifications, but it tends to be, I guess, more, it's kind of, Rinzai a little more masculine, and Soto a little more feminine. And then we have both aspects in our language, both those lines. So Master Rinzai was taught by his teacher Obaku, who is apparently a 7-foot giant. And they regularly involved themselves in wrestling matches. I think Rinzai would always come out worse. And Obaku apparently had a big callus on his forehead because he's a very obstinate man, so he spent a lot of time bowing. And he bowed so much he developed a hard pitch on his forehead. And Master Rinzai kind of used the same kind of direct teaching style with his students. There was a lot of shouting and sticks and parody. I mean, that was totally true, but this is a koan called Rinzai's True Person. So the case, koan, is it attention? So Rinzai addressed the assembly saying, "There is a true person of no rank, always leaving and entering the gates of your face. You beginners who have not witnessed him, look, look." Thereupon the monk asked, "What about this true person of no rank?" Rinzai got down from the seat and grabbed him. The monk hesitated. Rinzai pushed him away, saying, "Ah, this true person of no rank, what a shit stick he is." That's a koan. There's a verse that goes with this. It says, "Delusion and enlightenment are mutually opposed. Subtly conveyed, it's simple. In spring, the 100 flowers bloom by a zephyr. In strength, 9 oxen are turned about with a jerk. It's hopeless to dig a hole in mud, it won't stay open. Clearly the sweet spring's eye has been closed, suddenly dash out and it freely gushes forth." This one's quite a famous koan, "This true person of no rank, always leaving and entering the gates of your face." So the gates of your face are basically the senses, you know, the nose and the eyes and the ears. for now. There's this mess, and also the sensation and thought. So they're what we call the six senses. So this true person of no rank is always leaving and entering, you know, via those senses. So now I guess that in a Buddhist monastery there's a whole bunch of ranks, you know, from the abbot, you know, all the way down to the first person who arrives. And then also, I guess in some of the bigger ones, they would have had servants as well, who were, I guess, lay people who would be, you know, attending the monastery and doing a lot of the basic tasks. And so the true person of no rank, you know, it's an interesting thing. And so you kind of think about all the aspects of the way we place ourselves. You know, it's like, so what is it to be of no rank? And then, I guess you kind of think about the army to a certain extent, with all these ranks, and the martial arts have all these ranks. You know, at work we have all these ranks. Everywhere we go, we kind of place ourselves in some position, whether it's, you know, the child, a son or a daughter, an employee, a boss, a teacher, a New Zealander, a Wellingtonian, a Labour voter, a National voter, a no voter, I don't vote, climate change denier or acceptor, someone who's got an opinion on Brexit or not. You know, all these kind of things, we place ourselves in a particular kind of rank. And so Rinzai says, this true person of no rank. No rank. What is that like? What would that be like? No rank. And does it kind of mean not to have an opinion about something? What would that mean? Not place yourself, and especially think about, you know, if you're employed, about how you place yourself at work. You have horizontal relationships, vertical relationships. If you remove those, how would that be? And Master Rinzai says, so this true person of no rank is constantly leaving and entering through the six senses. Constantly leaving and entering to the six senses. You say constantly being experienced as the six senses. This true person of no rank. So no rank really is not placing yourself anywhere. You know, what is it to do that? Can we practice that? Like an openness. It's like being, I guess, like Shunryu Suzuki's beginner's mind. Not placing ourselves anywhere. And then the, you know, coming and going through the senses. What is it to directly experience sight, sound, taste, touch, thought? You know, he's kind of pointing to for us, to pointing it out for us, a way to practice, a way, like I said, practicing is normally not about going towards, but it's about sitting down and then letting the stuff that normally hinders us to relax. You know, what I didn't have, you know, I didn't need to hang on to these kind of ways that I place myself. You know, being open, being vulnerable. You know, the same kind of childlike innocence to experience and whatever it is that arises. And again, this is kind of like a session practice because you know, we have various responsibilities during this time, but we also have an opportunity and are creating this opportunity to put a lot of this stuff down. You know, so moment by moment we're experiencing this true person of no rank, no role, no description, no history, no future. Constantly being presented as these sounds, taste, touch. And so that's kind of the challenge that's being laid out there, or the path that's being described. You know, and it's not Zen. You know, it's not Zen. There's no place to be. There's no place we can nail it down or label this experience as something or other. So constantly coming and going, constantly changing through those six senses. You know, and Master Rinzai goes on and says, you beginners who have not witnessed this person, look, there's an exhortation. And the last bit really is that direct pointing. Master Rinzai says, you know, someone asks, I mean, good on them. Master Rinzai's a bit fearsome. So the monk has a bit of courage. And, you know, and I guess that's kind of opening himself up there. Well, how about this true man? What is this? What is this true? True man or woman of no rank. So Rinzai takes the challenge, gets down from the street, grabs the monk by the lapels, right in his face. The monk hesitated. So the monk is a bit confused. Rinzai pushed him away, saying, "This true man of no rank, you. What a shit step he is." How do you take that? And there's no answer to that. How do you take it? Sometimes offended, sometimes not. Sometimes indeed one is a real shifter. But one is not. It's just reading quite a touching description of the true person of no rank from just a little bit of a story from Genpo Rinpoche in his book here called Spitting Out the Bones, Zen Master's 45-year journey, and Genpo himself has gone from, you know, being a young student through being a very popular, charismatic teacher to being thrown out of the White Plum, and which is the association of teachers from Mazumi Roshi, and been through all the kind of highs and lows, and now he's kind of 70, kind of looking back on his life, going, what happened? you know, he's talking a little bit about this teacher called Uchiyama Roshi, who's a wonderful Soto Zen teacher in Japan, and he says, I remember when a group of us, including my Zumi Roshi, were having tea with Uchiyama Roshi, and he told us how he had been thrown out first by his peer group of successors in the lineage of Kodo Sawaki, then by the Soto Zen school, then by the whole Buddhist community who had been involved in ecumenical dialogues with Christians. Now, he said, ripping open his kimono and showing us his bare chest, all I have left is just this. How can we truly appreciate it, what it must have been like for such a devoted Buddhist as he was to go through such public humiliation? And how must Maizumi Roshi have felt at the very end of his life to say, I realize I have become the last barrier for my successors to transmit the Buddha Dharma to the West. You know, what a humbling thought after giving more than 40 years to propagating the Dharma. It is these kinds of rises and falls, successes and failures, that go into ripening and leveling of one's own ego. I thought it was just a kind of a really nice way about that. It's on that practical level of being a true person of no rank, being the way that we can respond most appropriately to the situations is about coming from that place of no particular place. And sometimes we get it wrong, sometimes it's shit stuff, sometimes so-called not. But I guess over the next 3 days, really use this time well. It's rare, really is rare. We don't know, how soon we'll be snuffed out. I've got a funeral to go to tomorrow, but I'm an employee of ours who, 38, homesick, died, heart failure, I think, and 2 young kids. And so you have no knowing, when your brief candle is going to be snuffed out. So it's probably unlikely to be over the next 3 days, but you never know. But yeah, just really take care of this, and you use the beauty of this place and the sustenance that's been provided. Really, and get to know this true person of no rank.